As we get settled here, I have Carla Valente and Tim Cole here to talk about registries and registrars. Registrars will be the part that I believe Tim will be talking about, and then Carla will take over for the registry bit.
Hello, everybody. I'm glad to see the room has filled up a little bit since the start of the last session, so it's pretty exciting. My name is Tim Cole. I'm the Senior Director of Registrar Relations, and in that capacity, I work with the over 1,000 GTLD registrars, and we manage our relationship with them. We are the ones that actually go through the contracting process to approve them for accreditation, and throughout the life of the contract and their interaction with ICANN, we're intimately involved with that. There's also a compliance department that is a separate entity that deals with contractual issues that may arise. So I like to think of us as the guys with the white hats, and they're the guys with the black hats. But it's not really quite like that. I think the registrar relations team, one of our biggest goals is to keep registrars out of trouble. So Carla works with the registries, and I work with the registrars, and so we're going to talk a little bit about. We're going to start, and I think Carla can do some of this too. We're going to start with just sort of giving a big overview of what changes are happening in the industry, and that may give you a little better feel for how the registries and registrars fit in. But basically, some of this information you'll probably see in other presentations as well. But I'm going to let Carla take this part, and I'll move to the next slide.
Hello, everybody. Just to understand, how many of you know what a registrar is or have worked for one? That's not fair. A lot of you. Would you like to give the presentation? Okay. This is a high-level view of some of the changes that are ongoing here at ICANN, and a lot of the sessions that you see around talk about some of those changes. So on the route, you have basically two groups of top-level domains. You have the GTODs, and then you have the CCTODs. The CCTODs is a group that is expanding through a program that is called the Fast Track Program, basically with the introduction of IDNs. This is actually the program that first introduced the IDNs to the root within ICANN. And the other program that you probably heard about is the new GTOD program. And what this does is to expand the number and the types, actually, of GTODs into the root. So nowadays you have the extensions. You see the round bubble on the top. Those are the extensions that you have now that are operational. But with the new GTODs, and as we go through the evaluation process more towards next year, you will probably see in the marketplace something that is a dot and then a city name, dot and then an acronym, dot and then an IDN ending, or a generic name ending, a community, etc. So this is one of the changes that you will see. And this is just a high-level timeline to give you a perspective that since 1998, that was when ICANN was formed. But even before that, we had some of the TODs that are well-known nowadays, like, for example, .com, .edu, .org, .net. So they were already part of the root and in existence and operation at that time. Then, during 2000, we had a round of introducing new TODs into the route, and that brought us a limited number of TODs, and the ones are listed there. 2004, there was yet another round, and that's what you see listed in the timeline. This is to show you that new GTODs, even though the program that you see today has a different criteria, different evaluation process, etc., and is more open in terms of volume, there were previous rounds from which we actually learned a lot of the process and what happens with the introduction of registries. And this is just to give you an idea that the program was developed with quite some time, approved in 2008 by the board. And since then, the program has been shaped to really, with the community input, to what it is today. I'm not going to expand too much about it because we have another presentation later that will talk specifically about the industry landscape and the new GTOD programs. So where we are now is that we have... can you pass on? We had 1,930 applications, about 7 withdrawals at this point. 652 were for Dot Brand, 116 IDNs, and here we have a little bit of a breakdown from a geographic perspective where those come from. And this is just to share with you because this is the change that is going to happen, and I'm going to talk more about the registry landscape, the GTOD registry landscape.
So this is a high-level chart that kind of tries to we try to put everything in perspective that ICANN there in the blue square in the middle has contracts with the GTLD registries and with the GTLD registrars, and the registrars have a contract each with the registries. So there's a contractual relationship among all the parties. The registrants will have a contract with the registrar. Now, some of the terms in those contracts are governed by our contract with the registrars, which is known as the RAA. You'll probably hear more talk this week about the RAA, which is the Registrar Accreditation Agreement. There is currently some negotiations going on to amend that contract and provide some additional responsibilities and terms for our contracted registrars. But as part of that, we also have some aspects of it that deal with contracting with a registrant, what terms have to be in that relationship and contract or registration agreement, as well as some requirements for their resellers. And we'll go into a little more of that in a little bit, but I just kind of wanted to at least put out here that the terms registrars and registries I know don't always translate well into various languages because it's not really the distinction is basically a distinction that was made through ICANN when we talk about registries, we're talking about the wholesale provider of top-level domains, the registrations through each top-level domain. When we talk about registrars, we're talking about the actual companies that deal with customers and manage that registration process. When we think about the registrants, and all of you probably, most of you or many of you are probably registrants yourselves, but we have small businesses that register their name for a restaurant so that they'll turn up in searches when people are trying to figure out where they want to go out to eat. Service providers, painters, house painters, or attorneys and so forth. Large brand owners. Now we're talking about, very large companies like Microsoft or Ford or... any number of large businesses are all going to have perhaps many, many domain names, depending on the brands that they are that they offer and that they want to have registered. And then individuals for personal use. There's quite a bit of quite a few people that have, you know, registered a domain name for their own personal use, or maybe for their families, or for a blog or something. But and then finally, the other group that has become more well known in recent times are the domainers, and these are the folks that invest in domain names for a variety of potential income opportunities. They range from having very popular generic domain names that they offer up for sale, and they may sell them for several thousands or millions of dollars, or they may be using them to provide advertising when people land on their page, and they then collect some income for the advertisings that, for the ads that are shown and the people that see them, or if the people click through and go to a site that from their website, they may get some kind of commission for that. So those are the most typical type of registrants that we see and that we see the registrars engaging with. Now, this is perhaps not a totally complete list, but it's a pretty broad list of the types of registrars. So when I say there are 1,000-plus registrars, there are many with various different kinds of business models. You know, we have the traditional retail model where a registrar sets up a website and people learn about them through advertising or searching, and they go to that registrar to open an account and register a domain name. There are other registrars that don't deal necessarily directly with the public themselves and the customers, but they deal with many, many resellers who then each have their own channel of bringing customers in. And we'll go into a little more detail about the resellers in a minute. There are other registrars that are they try to strive for the lowest cost. They just want to be no frills. You know, you need to know what you're doing with your domain name if you buy it from us or buy the registration from us, but we'll give you the cheapest price possible. But that means that we're not going to have a lot of people to answer phones and take your questions and so forth. You better know what you're doing, you may want to go to a registrar that may cost a little more but that provides more service. There are also registrars that deal pretty exclusively in the market of having very secure, very high-level registrations so that they may be the ones that Microsoft uses or any other, you know. Google.com is a very valuable name, and they really wouldn't want it to be hijacked or anything, so they want it held at a registrar that's going to provide, you know, very high-level security. And there are niche markets. There are some registrars that just appeal to, you know, or that might be domainers, there might be different customer base that they will target or focus on and provide service, you know, pretty exclusively to that specific market. There are some registrars, a handful anyway, that only provide you know, a single TLD, registrations in just one TLD, and that's their entire market. They're not, you won't necessarily go to them for .com, .net, .info, .mobi. You might just go to them for .coop and nothing else. And then last, there are private registrars. People set up a registrar so that they or a company they own can use it to register domain names and so forth, and they don't offer registrations to anyone else. Similarly, there are different business models for the resellers. And you can think of some of these, and maybe you've had dealings with some of these. Someone who does web development. You know, a small company might go to someone and say, we want a presence on the internet. Can you help us set it up? And they will design the web page and so forth and so on, and they will go and register the name for that customer. And so in that respect, the customer isn't going to the registrar themselves. They're going to this web developer. Similarly, web hosts, same sort of idea that some companies sell you a hosting package that includes a domain name and so much space. So they are offering domain names just as a part of their larger business and are also considered resellers in that respect. ISPs, internet service providers, in some cases, you know, you'll sign up with an internet service provider and they will help you register a name, or maybe you get a name as part of your signing up with them. Then we have the domain name retailers. These are folks that perhaps don't want to go through the process or spend the money to become a registrar themselves, so they develop a relationship with an existing registrar, but they present themselves as a standalone company that wants to do retail business, but without the requirement of the contract with ICANN. And then almost anyone else. You can have an attorney that may, a company may want to start up a new brand, or maybe a movie company wants to is going to create a new movie, but they don't want anyone to know what it is, but they want to get the title of the movie registered in advance so that nobody else will grab it once they hear about the movie. So they may say, okay, we're going to do this movie called Lion King, and we want to get lionking.com, but we don't want to let anyone know that we're the ones behind this Lion King yet, because it's still a secret and we haven't developed it, et cetera, so they will have a third party register it for them, so that on the who is and everything, it doesn't indicate necessarily who's actually behind it. And that is that's just an example of where you might have someone might be a third party doing registrations. Again, the role of the reseller, there are click-through affiliates. These are resellers that pretty much find customers and bring them in, but as far as they're concerned, the customer relationship is still with the registrar. More often than not, you'll see sort of a turnkey type of setup where someone approaches a larger registrar that offers reseller services, and they want to use their brand name, and they want to have a website that looks like it's all them, you know. And so the registrar will work with them to help them produce a website that has all of their names and all of that, but it's actually just a front end to the registrar for registrations. And then there are really much more active resellers that have strong relationships with registrants. There are times there can be compliance issues because it hasn't always been entirely clear what obligations that are in the contract with the registrars are required of the resellers as well. And so part of our RAA negotiations that I mentioned earlier are addressing some of these issues as well. That's it's an ongoing issue within the ICANN community, is the discussions of the reseller issues. Now I'm going to turn it over to Carla so she can give you some background on the registry side of this business.
Thank you, Tim. So registries. This is one of the definitions for registries. Different people will, you know, slightly change this definition, but basically is the authority that takes care of the master database for the specific TOD. So nowadays you see, for example, for the .com, there's a company called VeriSign that does it. For .org, there's a company called PIR. You also have, from different countries have different registries. Some of them are private companies, some of them are universities or government, or, you know, in different countries that is managed slightly differently than on the GTODs, and a lot of it has to do with the history of the registries, how they came about and how the actual extension was assigned, you know, back when. In Canada, the .ca is managed by CIRA. Organization, for example. So this is what you see of what a registry does, at least nowadays, in this pure separation of roles of what a registry is and a registrar is in today's market. Usually when we talk about registry and we talk about critical functions, we're talking about five things. And those are the ones that you see on the screen right now. DNS resolution, DNSSEC, properly signed zone, shared registration system, registration data directory services, registry data escrow. So those are the things that a registry usually does or is expected to do and to run well. Some of those things they report upon and we check upon, and we always make sure that those things are well and running. This is what keeps the lights on, basically, on a TOD. Can we pass, please? But besides that, obviously, there is the day-to-day management, right? So every registry has to work on their own strategy and marketing management. To whom are they catering the TOD? Is this a specific TOD that is to a very specific group of registrants, like, for example, .museum? Is that catered to, can any of us register, or only organizations that are museum organizations and can prove that through a certain way, you know, certain documentation? So each registry defines their own strategy in the marketplace. This is what the TOD is about, and this is to whom this TOD is tailored, and in order to register that domain name, you have to be ABC and you have to comply with certain rules. And the rules vary enormously depending on the TOD. It can be something as simple as, you know, you can register only domain name if you are a company within a specific industry, or you can only register a certain number of domains, or you can only register in ASCII and not IDN. So each registry has its own rules. Just because it's a GTOD, it doesn't mean that everyone and anyone can register at any time. Some of the registries are as open, like anyone can register. But others have very specific rules, and you have those reflected into the registration terms and conditions. Obviously, a register does transactional management, right, on the day-to-day when domain names are registered, when domain names are modified, or when they basically are, you know, deleted or, you know, transferred to a third party, etc. So the registry works with the respective registrars and the parties involved, you know, to make that transaction happen. Again, the rules around how can I modify my domain name under a specific extension, and how long does it take, and how is it done, all of that depends on different registries and registrars that you deal with. Obviously, a registry deals with technical issues management. They have servers. They have all kinds of things that they need to make sure to have the DNS working the way it's supposed to work. They have to deal with staffing issues, legal issues, like any company does. So registry is always a company. It's an organization that has all the infrastructure of an organization, some very specific technical know-how to make sure that the five functions are taken care of, and other than that, it operates like any business. Transactional management, so some of the things that I talked before, so new registrations, domain name management modifications, and then renewals, transfers, billing and payment systems, outsourcing some of those services. So this is the kind of things that you see in the marketplace. If you can go back, please. If you look at what I say about outsourcing is that some of the registries nowadays, they choose to perform an X number of functions that a business performs, but maybe have the back end or some of the specific technical things managed or outsourced to a third party that already has a very robust infrastructure and processes in place. So this, you know, maximizes their ability to offer certain level of security and service, and also, you know, to concentrate on other areas of the business and not necessarily hire expert staff themselves, but, you know, outsource certain functions like, you know, any business does. You know, the outsourcing is a business decision in many situations. The level of automation and, again, the level of service and the rules around any kind of the transactional things that you see here will vary from registry to registry. Okay. Yeah. some of the technical issues that registries face on a day-to-day, DNS management, automation, how much is automated or not automated when they deal with registrars and, you know, in all of this modifications and, you know, transfers, etc. That also depends on the different registries, how much they have automated or not. Server provisioning, taking care of redundancy, taking care of scalability, how is the infrastructure, the technical infrastructure of the registry. It really depends on who they are, who their customers are, and how they chose to build their business. Some of them are, you know, extremely robust and can scale up to millions in registries. Some of them, that was not the business model. You know, so they have a comfortable level of automation, but they don't necessarily, you know, will be having, you know, millions of registrations out there. So all of the technical issues or the technical infrastructure that a registry chooses depends a lot on the business model that they decide to embrace and how they decide to manage their TOD. Staffing, obviously, they have to deal with customer service, staff management, distribution management, like any other business. Some of the registries you will see have more of a global presence, being a GTOD. Some of the registries cater to a more local type of, or very specific type of customer. So this really, how much is done around staffing and the distribution and infrastructure depends on the registry business model and depends on the geographic presence of that registry. Nowadays, the GTODs that we have today, they are present in the United States, they are present in Europe, and we have one in Asia. They cater to, some of them cater to very specific customers, like .cat is for the region of Catalonia within Spain, and they are very strong and specific, you know, catering to that region and being structured in that region. .com for several years has, you know, done a lot of marketing and has, you know, expanded the .com around the world, the .com brand around the world. But again, it depends a lot on the registry. Legal issues that registries need to know and take care of, obviously, end user terms and conditions. So when you, as an end user, register domain name, either dealing with a reseller or a registrar, you probably have to accept certain terms and conditions. Depending on who you're dealing with, you're accepting terms and conditions that are from the registered, but also from this third party that you're dealing with. The registry really provides the basic framework for you to be able to license or have this TOD, you know. So, for example, as I said in the beginning, the rules of who can register or cannot and why. For how long can you register a domain name? Can you register for a period of 5-10 years? Do you have to renew only for 1 year? How is that process going to work? Privacy policy. Privacy policy is a big one, and a lot of discussion around privacy policies, because there are certain things that are required and the registries do, but they also, depending on where they are established or legally established or operational, they have also to comply with different rules of that specific country. Acceptance, use policy, you know, certain things that you can or cannot do with your websites will depend also on the registry. Like for the longest time, if you wanted to own a domain name under .cat, which is the Catalonia domain name that I mentioned before, you needed to have some kind of a cultural language content in your website that is associated with the Catalonian culture. Reseller terms. You know, so who can resell, how is resold, etc. Usually the registry has a price that is set for that TOD, and what happens is that end users end up paying something different sometimes what the registry set up, because you are buying from a registrar or a reseller, and obviously they put their you know, fees on the top of what a registry sells, or sometimes they package services. So many times when I talk to people, they're not quite sure how much does a certain TOD cost from a registry perspective. If you want to know this information out of curiosity, we have look at under agreements, registry agreements on our website, and you can see all of the terms of this registry, how much they charge from the registrars and so forth. Dispute resolution issues, how the registries, what kind of dispute resolution process and rules they decide to embrace. Some of those things we're trying to standardize as much as possible for the end user and the registrant's sake. Global compliance, you know, not only the compliance with ICANN compliance department, you know, making sure that the registry does everything that they are supposed to do according to their agreements, but also they have compliance issues in their own countries. You know, some countries have different rules about what can or cannot happen in terms of, for example, content on the internet. It's much more than a, as you can see, it's much more than a database and a software, right? The registry includes a network infrastructure like firewalls, load balancers, routers, package, the protocol and application servers, and, you know, the billing system. So there's lots of different systems that go into managing a registry, and the level of robustness and complexity of the system varies from registry to registry, but they all look into that. But especially now, looking into new GTODs, we must make sure that the registries are designed with security, stability, and robustness in mind. And this is for our protection, not only because it's a business practice that is a good business practice, but it's also for our protection with everything that goes on into the cyber world. I always remember Vint Cerf saying that the internet, the way it was, you know, built and designed, it was built for openness. It was built by, you know, intellectuals, people that just wanted really to see that connectivity, you know, and the marvelous experiment that evolved. It was not built for security. So we are now working, you know, as a community as much as possible to build all of the security mechanisms. As new things happen on the internet, you know, this beauty of openness attracted also, you know, very masterful minds doing some things that might not be as good. So we have to, you know, add as much as possible the security and stability and robustness to protect ourselves when we are, you know, using the internet. So here you see the data infrastructure security. So there's different databases that a registry has. And what is interesting, if you think about what Tim said in the beginning, like all of the different parties in today's world, you see the ICANN, and then you see the registry and the registrar and the reseller and you as a registrant. And just think about it, all of the different databases and data transferred between all of those parties and the different points of entry and, you know, what level of security each of the parties and each of the point of entries have varies a lot. So it's quite, you know, interesting to see that landscape. And companies nowadays are very mindful that they are part of a chain and they need to make sure that their infrastructure and their security level, firewalls and everything that they have and they manage is properly protected, and the databases that they share or the data that they transfer, you know, in the cyber world are properly protected. One more? Other security considerations like policy. You know, if there is a security issue, how does a registry handle that? The security of the organization itself, the personnel security policies, the physical environmental security, the operations and communications, how it's done, and so forth. So there's a lot of security considerations that a registry has to do nowadays. As I said, many of those things obviously are good business practices, but some of those things are due to the environment and how much the environment evolves in terms of, you know, cyber attacks or cyber crimes, etc. Registries and registrars are constantly, you know, looking into different ways to make sure their data and their operations are properly protected. They also should have a continuity of business, right? Because if something happens with the registry, then the impact is not only on registraries, on all of us that happen to have a TOD under this registry. And if some of us, our business depends on that TOD, our livelihood depends on the TOD, because that's how we make money, having this TOD offline for a minute or a second or a few hours is a huge deal. Imagine eBay going offline for a few minutes and things like that. So we need to, you know, make sure that those businesses, and they have to be careful to have continuity plans. So what to expect to the near future? I'm not going to expand a lot on that because, as I said, there's another presentation that will cover those things. But with new GTODs, we expect to see diversity, innovation, new players in the marketplace. If you go Tuesday. Tuesday there is the registry stakeholder group. The registry stakeholder group is made of the GTODs and they meet to discuss issues related to GTODs. We expect that group to really grow and have more players around. Vertical integration is something that is going to change the landscape as well, because that, you know, clear difference or differentiation in roles and responsibilities. This is a registrar and this is only what it does. This is a registrar and this is only what it does. That may change with vertical integration, because what it simply means is that registries can own registrars and vice versa, right? So registries in registrars, the line, the division between those two, it's going to be not as straightforward as it is today. And because it is a reality of business, success and failure of registries, this is a reality of the marketplace. So we cannot know now which ones are going to fail, which ones are going to succeed, but this is a reality that happens into the marketplace. And from an ICANN perspective, if a registry fails, we are building a process in place that makes sure that the five main functions of the registry, which basically it's keeping the lights on, is there. Those are operational. And this is done through the what we call the Ibero program. That's the emergency back-end registry operator. That is a company that has all of the registry infrastructure, and when we have a failing registry, that company immediately, in an emergency maneuver, takes over those five functions to make sure that the lights are on until that issue is resolved. So that's basically, it's the continuity of services that we are looking at. TOD acceptance issues, this is something that you need to be aware of, or technical people basically, you know, have to be even more aware of, because what happens, and we experienced that in previous rounds, is that some systems on the internet, they are built to identify an X number of characters as a top level or a set list of top level domains. So we know from previous experiences that when certain TODs, for example, with four characters launched into the marketplace, and you happen to have an email from that organization, and you used your email in a web, you know, form or something, the system would reject your email address with that top-level domain, saying, you know, please use a valid address. This is not recognized. So this issue, you know, has been worked on by this 2004 and 2000 registries, but still it's out there. You know, there are still systems on the internet that were built to either recognize a certain set of characters or recognize only ASCII characters or recognize a set list. And we are working on educating the technical community or people around the world, saying, you know, this is one of the issues that need to be fixed by companies, basically. And there's not much that we can do. There's no way that we can fix that unless we have the cooperation of those companies to update their systems to incorporate all of the new GTOD. So in the future, if you use a new TOD, and the system can recognize as being a valid, something valid. What can go wrong? Lots of things can go wrong. This is some of the things that happen when you have a TOD acceptance issue, right? So websites require registration, do not accept your extension, contract terms do not recognize your email address, or if you use a certain extension. So you have lots of different layers, you know, of issues. It's not just a web form is checked. This is some of the ways that TOD acceptance can be improved. So through technical work, through public relations work, so awareness. So if you, for example, as a user, have an email address that has bounced or a form that has rejected your email address saying that is not valid, you know, maybe you aware of that issue can call the company and say, hey, it is valid and there's a problem in your system, actually. ICANN is doing outreach, and we still need your help to continue doing this outreach, connecting with ISPs, network service providers, as I said, some of the people on the internet that we know that can help with the systems, and so forth. The future registries have a significant role in helping us and helping the registrants to make sure the TOD that they have is accepted. And we noticed from the registries before what they did basically when they noticed that registrars or end users were having issues, they would, you know, help chase down where the issue was and work with some companies. And I'm talking about big browsing, you know, companies really that, you know, had that issue fixed. So this is it from me. Thank you very much. And we are ready for questions. How long do we have?
I just wanted to echo, you know, one of the things that Carla touched on, and she said it's going to be covered in another presentation, but you may or may not make it to that presentation, is that the reason we're talking about the large number of new TLD applicants that we've, you know, are currently having in the process is to sort of give you an idea of the scope of the way things could be changing in the very near future. I started out by saying we have 1,000 registrars, but we really only have about 20 or fewer GTLD registries that they can actually offer to their customers. Now, if you think about it, where we may have 1,000-plus registrars and 1,000 potential registries, the complexity of that and the scalability of that is, you know, is way beyond what people are accustomed to today. So going forward, you know, and many of you are just on the cutting edge of, you know, what's going to happen over the next decade or so, and especially in some of the countries that have a potential for a large boom in internet users, as well as more developed countries that will have a large number of options available. It's going to be a brand new world, and it's going to be quite possible changes where we may have registries that are also the registrar, and how to manage that for ICANN when we've always had a distinct contract with the registry and a distinct contract with the registrar. Now we may have registries who are registrars, and that's going to add a new complexity to our ability to contract with them. So I just wanted to add that a little bit to what Carla had said earlier, and I agree. Now is, you know, we're definitely open for questions. Are there any here?
Any? Yeah, that will be good if you could ask a few questions. But I'll ask one question, if you don't, to Carla and Tim. One of the questions we often receive in these sessions about this presentation, registries and registrars, it's all fine how the business side for you guys and the registries and the registrars are working. But what about the end user? So say I have a domain name registered. And I have a registrar for that, right? and but I have a problem. I want to transfer it, or I'm not happy with the registrar. What do I do? Where do I go? What are my options? Is ICANN speaking to me, or should I be going and talking to the registrar? Is there another mechanism? Thank you.
Yes, ICANN has an inter-registrar transfer policy in place, and through that policy, governs how domain names can be transferred between registrars. And if you were in that position where you wanted to move from your current registrar, the first step you would do is select the new registrar that you wish to start using. And then you go to that registrar and say, I want to transfer my name to you from... We go to ABC registrar, but your name is currently at XYZ registrar. So you go to ABC and say, I would like to transfer my name that is currently at XYZ to you. And then that registrar initiates the process. But you also have to provide some indication that you are authorized to make that change. You'll have to get a code and so forth, typically, to prove that, so that some stranger can't just come along and say, hey, I want to transfer this name and it's mine. You have to, there's some more exhaustive procedures and policies behind that I don't really want to go into right now, but it's definitely a process. ICANN is not involved in that process directly. Our policy governs it, but basically what happens is, assuming the authorization is verified that you are the right person and you want to, then the registrar goes to the registry and says, please move this name from registrar XYZ over to me, registrar ABC. And the registry actually just reassigns the name to the new registrar. I know there have to be more questions out there. Yes.
Hi. I have a question. You were mentioning that the amount of registries, of course, are going to increase, and I'm sure that the amount of registrars are also going to increase. My specific question is if ICANN has developed like a specific area to help new registrars that are going to be created in the next months, to help them become accredited and to help them a little bit through this process, so that also this profile of business can be expanded?
That's a good question. We do have a training program, and we have a fair amount of information on our website, but we are also looking at, you know, what other things we need to do to provide better communication and better information for newcomers to the industry, for example, or maybe an established brand is getting their brand name as a TLD, but they also want to now have a registrar, but they aren't familiar with ICANN at all, or they're not familiar with the process. So we help provide that. In some cases, the registries, the existing registries, for example, VeriSign or Affiliates or PIR, will help new registrars become accredited. They'll help walk them through it. There are also other companies that actually work directly as a basically sort of as a consultant. They walk the people through becoming a registrar, and then they provide the back end services. So there's a pretty good variety. But if you know of anyone that has those kinds of questions, they can always contact my department, and we'll be glad to put someone in touch with them that can walk them through it and tell them, you know, what is done, what can needs to be done. We do have a fair number of materials on our website that are translated into a variety of languages as well. So, you know, we're always anxious to try to do better at helping people through that process. So thank you for asking.
I didn't get the name of your department.
I'm sorry. It's the Registrar Relations Department. And I can give you my card afterwards, too.
I am Andreas Lamini. The TLDs are sort of owned by a particular registry. That is, each TLD is sort of owned by a registry. Now, if you say that there's going to be multiplicity of registries. What is going to happen to the ownership of those TLDs? And if you take VeriSign and turn it and give it license to be a registrar as well, isn't that going to be some kind of a monopoly? Is it not going to distort the business? And then my last question is, registrars, the last time I checked, I don't know now, the last time I checked, there wasn't a single one in Africa for the TLDs, generic TLDs.
I'm sorry, you're saying there wasn't a registrar? I didn't understand.
There wasn't a single one GTLD registrar in Africa, in the whole of Africa. I don't know now.
Yeah, we...
So I wonder if, because maybe it's the costs that are prohibitive, isn't there something that I can do to help in such situations? Because really, when we don't have a registrar within our neighborhood, sort of, then you find that you've got to deal with foreign currencies, which at times can be very exorbitant. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for your question. We do have a handful of registrars in Africa at present, but we clearly see that as a growing market, and there's definitely a lot of thought is being given to how we will expand the availability and the presence in that region. We have an African initiative strategy, that is being talked about right now within the ICANN community, and clearly a part of that will be how do we create better access to registrars and registrars that are familiar with and sensitive to the cultural issues at hand, et cetera, and language issues, so that someone in Africa that wants to register a name doesn't have to go to a United States company to do it. But there are cost issues and things like that, and we'll need to find a way to answer those questions. But we don't have an answer today, but we're working on it.
I want to make sure that I understood your first question. I don't know if I did. So different registries own, basically, they have a contract with ICANN that allows them to manage a TOD for X period of time. With new GTODs, it's 10 years. With existing TODs, it varies depending on their contract, 5, 7, so forth. So registry does not necessarily own a TOD, like we don't own a domain name when we register. We license it, and then, you know, we renew, we pay renewals, and so long we pay the renewals, we have the registration. And the same goes with the TOD. You know, we have a contract with a registry, and so long that contract exists within ICANN and the contract is renewed because that registry has complied with all of the terms of the contract, that registry has the presumptive right to renew that contract and continue to manage the TOD. So I'm trying to be very careful with the name own, because it's a contractual relationship that it's not necessarily a given, you know, forever. But you have to comply with certain rules in order to have that. Does this address your question? Was that your question? Can you speak to the phone? Because we do have remote participants that cannot hear you. Thank you. Sorry.
Then how do you multiply the ownership? Because you said there's going to be multiplication of the ownership. That is multiplication of the registries.
Yes.
And also then that the accompanying question to that is that then if you make this registry become a registrar as well, isn't that going to distort the market, sort of create some kind of monopoly or make it too powerful when it has all the rights within under one roof.
Yeah, so let's make sure that I understand your question. So I'll try to simplify. I will make sure that I don't simplify to the point of distorting your question. So because we have the vertical integration in which now the ownership of registrars and registrars, basically the rules changed, right? Registrars can own registrars and vice versa. And because we have an increased number of registries in the marketplace and potentially registrars as well, your question is what mechanisms I can have or does not have to make sure we prevent monopoly?
Sorry, if I can. The question is, because a TLD is managed by a company, how then are they going to multiply the companies that will manage TLDs, that will become registries? How do you multiply the registries when, say, .com is managed by VeriSign?
Yeah.
Then how can there be more companies becoming registries if there is only a limited number of GTLDs?
So a TLD is a set of characters that is added to the root, right? And we did a root study, and in this study we determined that we probably can add up to 1,000 a year of TLDs. You know, there is a number that we need to enter to the root to verify how the root responds to it. But we didn't see any limitation of how many TLDs the root can support. Because of no technical limitation, there is not necessarily a business limitation of having, 30 TLDs or having 300 or 3,000 or, you know, how many are there. So technically, there is no limitation on having an increased number of TODs into the marketplace. How the marketplace responds to it, how the marketplace embraces or not new TODs is something that we are going to see in the upcoming years.
How many applications in this current round did we get from Africa?
So we have a total of 1,930 applications, from which only 17 are from Africa. So Africa, from all of the regions, has the lowest number of GTOD applicants. I'm talking about applications. It doesn't mean that we are going to have 17 registries in Africa. It means that those are going to go through an evaluation process, and whoever passes this evaluation process is going to become a registry, and that's the same for any kind of applicant. But right now, the region has the lowest number of applicants.
Okay, though the question, I think, indirectly, I've been answered. My question basically was, is the management of the GTL, of the TLD, is it going to change? Is it going to be like two different companies will be able to manage one GTLD, or is it still going to be one company managing a TLD, and then there is only going to be an increase in the number of TLDs?
So we have nowadays a hybrid situation. And what I mean by that is that you have in some situation one registry that manages one single TLD. Right? .cat. .cat is the .cat, a company manages only .cat. We have also VeriSign that manages .com, but they also manage .net, they also manage .name. So they manage more than one TOD. And if you look at the applicants, so number of applications versus number of applicants is a different number. Okay? So there's companies that apply for more than one TOD. Each of those applications or each evaluation is done separately, and maybe they will be granted all of those TODs or maybe not. Okay, but you can have a situation in one company is going to manage multiple TODs, like we even have nowadays.
Now I know we're a little bit over on time, but are there any other questions? And if we haven't answered your question completely to your satisfaction, come back and talk to us. Someone over there, can you come to the microphone, please?
Okay. My name is Victor Donner. I'm a fellow from Cameroon. So thank you for your presentation. My question was concerning the improvement of number of registrars in Africa, because until now we just have 5. But as far as an African strategy have been initiated, I will keep my question and see how I can will do after that content of that strategy will be published. And I hope that I can will not only wait and a policy from the GNSO, because in the past when I asked question how to improve number of registrars in Africa, they say the policy have to come from the community or from the GNSO supporting organ, from the GNSO. And as far as there are not a huge number of African registrar in the GNSO constituency group, it's difficult to see an initiative or a policy maybe to bring let's say a positive discrimination to the in the era, because there are some point in the registrar accreditation agreement that a company from economic context in Africa cannot fulfill that. So if I can continue to set, I know registrar is a critical business and I can have to care about any user who we are going to deal with that registrar, but I can also have to consider all economic context. So a company in Africa cannot fulfill the same insurance requirement like a company in the US or in Europe. And as you can see, the few, let's say 4 of that 5 registrars which are located in Africa become accredited through an American or an European company. So I hope there will be improvement concerning the registrar accreditation agreement in the future. And ICANN will not only wait to see policy initiative from supporting organization. ICANN will look globally the market and see we have something to do to improve and make newcomers come to the domain name industry.
Can I say something? So, yeah, you touched on very important points, which is, you know, the registrar accreditation, and also for the registry program, we had a community, you know, saying to us 185,000 for a registry only as an application fee. It's really not realistic for the economy in Africa, and if you're going to use that money for an application, that money is being taken away from infrastructure that we need to build. It's a different reality, and you're not providing, you know, access and opportunity as you should. One of the things that came out of it was an applicant support program. The applicant support program was basically we reduced the fees for applicants that met certain criteria, and we have 3 applicants only. Unfortunately, not a high number of applicants. We hope that in future rounds of new GTODs, this program is reviewed, is more robust, and attends more to the needs, and most importantly is we have more communications about it in the region, and people can prepare in time and take advantage of things like that in time. So this is one point that I wanted to make. The second point is the African initiative or the strategy that this administration and ICANN is very committed to the engagement of the regions around the world, particularly in Africa, through that specific strategy. So I invite you to please take a look at the information that we have. Participate as much as possible. I'm not sure, Phyllis, do we have a session? Yeah, you talk about the session. And also in the public forum, take the opportunity like you did today and, you know, talk to the board and to the community because, you know, your voice and this kind of opinions are important.
Okay, I really cut this off because we are out, running out of time. But this is an important point. So as you walk back to your seat, and for everybody, there is a strategy that is launched for Africa, and there might be some more even for LACNIC. There's some capacity building in Latin America too. So please keep an eye on these happenings. The African strategy is up for on the schedule for tomorrow. I believe it's at 3 p.m. on Monday. Please be in the session. That's one of the main sessions in the main rooms. And the other thing is, during the public forum on Thursday, there is a topic already set for globalization and internalization of ICANN. I think these comments are all also relevant there because it's not only ICANN we are talking about or ICANN board, what is happening or what they're approving, but what you're touching there is a within community communication where GNSO, when they're building policies or developing policies, they need to be keeping an eye on further factors maybe in different parts of the world. How they are going to do that, you need to help them. They need to listen to you. So this is what we want to create in these environments already. So thanks. And we hope to see these comments over there too. Thank you. Now, thank you, Carla and Tim, for your time. We are running out of time a little, and that will affect my next speaker, Michelle. But with her permission, we will have 10 minutes for coffee break, and then we will be back here. She will be talking about new developments in DNS. Thank you. So please be back at 55. Thank you.